Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The Supreme Court upheld the law to ban the TikTok app in the U.S. if the China-owned parent company does not sell by Sunday's deadline. Justices unanimously agreed national security risks of Americans' personal data is greater than free speech arguments. The CEO of TikTok, Xu Chu, in a video today promised the 100 million users that TikTok will keep fighting.
Rest assured, we will do everything in our power to ensure our platform thrives.
Chu also thanked President-elect Trump for his pledge to try and delay the ban. Last-minute preparations are underway for President-elect Trump's inauguration Monday in Washington, D.C., including moving the ceremony indoors. Wind chills are expected to dip into the single digits. It will make it the coldest inauguration in 40 years. In Bolivia, a judge issued an arrest warrant for former President Evo Morales. The 65-year-old failed to appear in court in a case alleging sexual abuse of a minor. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For 92.7 WMDX News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. After the weekend, we'll have a new presidential administration. President-elect Donald Trump has promised mass deportations that he says will start immediately. And at least one local advocacy group says they'll be prepared. Dane Sanctuary Coalition says they're working with the Dane County Office of Immigration Affairs to protect immigrants here in the Madison area. That coalition is made up of Centro Hispano, Voces de la Frontera, and local faith communities. Meanwhile, Dane County officials are worried that people who are here illegally will stop reaching out for services and help when they need them. That's especially true when it comes to law enforcement. But Sheriff Calvin Barrett and District Attorney Ishmael Ozan want people to know they're separate from the federal government. When someone is getting services from the county, their immigration status doesn't matter. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement labels the Dane County Sheriff's Office a non-cooperative agency. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, people who are here illegally are less likely to commit a crime than natural-born U.S. citizens. In fact, multiple studies now indicate that increasing immigration in communities with inclusive policies can actually lower crime rates overall. Data from the University of Maryland shows 63% of Wisconsin voters prefer a path to citizenship over mass deportation. And that's true on both sides of the aisle. Even a majority of Wisconsin Republicans prefer a pathway to citizenship. It's estimated that 70% of Wisconsin's dairy workforce is made up of immigrants. Meanwhile, fewer guns were confiscated from Wisconsin airports last year. The new report just came out from the TSA. It shows that in 2024, agents stopped 29 guns from going through security checkpoints across the state. In 2023, that number was 36. But actually, here in Madison at the Dane County Regional Airport, the numbers have risen slightly. Agents there seized 4 guns in 2023 and 6 in 2024. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. You're listening to 92.7 WMDX News.
Is Jordan Love the one? Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NFL Packers GM Brian Gutekunst held his end-of-season press conference and was asked after 2 years, does he think that quarterback Jordan Love will someday lead the team to a Super Bowl?
I've talked many times about how even-keeled he is, and I think, you know, his growth, I mean, the way he manages our football team has been pretty impressive.
The Packers have fired defensive line coach Jason Rebovich, the D-line criticized for a lack of quarterback sacks. Baseball tributes to Bob Uecker, who died after a 2-year battle with lung cancer. Uecker loved talking to players in the clubhouse. I asked Christian Yelich if he could trust Uecker to keep those chats private.
Well, I think he was always on the player's side. You know, I think he always had our back no matter what, and he was always pretty passionate about that. I think he would tell you that on a daily basis, whether you're going through a hard time or not, or whatever was going on the field. And, you know, you got the true version of Bob where he could let his guard down.
That's the Brewers' Christian Yelich with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
A mostly cloudy, warm winter day with high temperatures tapping the low 40s, all ahead of a cold front moving through this evening, sparking up a few flurries tonight, alongside breezy winds, slapping wicked wind chills on top of crashing temperatures. Overnight lows fall to 10 but feel sub-zero. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 48.
Equability offers custom-tailored clothing for those with dexterity or mobility challenges. Plus, first-time shoppers get 10% off. Use code CIVIC10 at checkout. Visit equability.co, equability.co, to make your clothes easier to wear today.
Hey everybody, Dane County Humane Society reminds you, hey, bang on the hood of your vehicle before starting your engine this winter. It's that simple. You can save a cat's life. With frigid temperatures and little shelter, some cats are going to try to find a way to keep safe and warm, including, guess where, under car hoods and in the wheel well of your vehicle. So before climbing into your vehicle and starting the engine, bang on the hood and give cats an opportunity to flee. To learn more, visit giveshelter.org.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
John Peterson and Gordy Young.
On our next show, we'll welcome in former Madison Mayor Paul Soglin.
We'll talk about all the big changes on State Street and take a look at his last few entries on X. Weird ones.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 till 8. This is Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
Welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. I am Jess P.S., the producer of this fine program. For today, we'll be looking back at two of our best hours with Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, and of course, our favorite Delano Democrat. First, we're going back to December 30th, talking about Jimmy Carter's legacy.
Harvey, welcome back, man. Happy days.
2 weeks since I've talked to you. 2 weeks.
It seems like a lifetime ago, man. A lot has happened, and you know, the older we get, the faster it goes, Harvey. So we'll get to some of the topics, but I wanted to start where most people are today, and no, not the fact that the actress that played Alice recently passed away as well. But Jimmy Carter, at age 100, passed away. You know, somewhat of a legacy, mixed legacy, but one thing I think most folks are reflecting on and responding to today, Harvey, is that he was a good man. What's your reaction to the passing of the former president, Harvey?
I think that's a very good way of understanding him. He was a good man. The mixed legacy goes back to the fact that he really was a president who failed us, basically failed us.
And in what regard?
Well, he, for a start, let me make clear that he actually was a member of the infamous Trilateral Commission headed by David Rockefeller, paid for by David Rockefeller. By the way, so too was George H.W. Bush. And the Trilateral Commission was organized in Britain, well, Europe, the United States, and East Asia, especially Japan, with the idea that capitalism was under siege. That working people were and social movements had placed capitalism under siege, and it was time basically to reduce democracy, literally to reduce democracy, especially here in the United States. And Carter was a member of that group. They issued a report in 1975 titled The Crisis of Democracy, and his name is not one of the authors, but he, and along with the many other leading political and economic corporate figures, is behind it, so to speak. So when he became president, he did run a campaign that seemed to move to the left, to embrace the Democratic Party's FDR tradition. But once in the White House, he pursued a different kind of politics. He did not support labor law reform, which was an effort, first of all, to guarantee full employment, guarantee all Americans a job. And also, and this is important, the labor law reform part was to basically finally bring an end to the worst elements of the Taft-Hartley Act of 1947 that had empowered Southern states to create and turn themselves into right-to-work states and limited labor's capacity to organize in those states. So in that regard, I mean, he clearly was not a friend of working people. Also, he decided to place his interest in returning the Panama Canal to Panama above questions of environmental the state of the environment. He turns back on environmentalism. He also turns back on Ralph Nader's consumer rights movement. And moreover, he pushed through the deregulation of transportation and business, the beginnings of the deregulation of transportation in this country, and also business and finance. So for those reasons, I actually do not respect him as president. This was not the kind of thing that I could respect historically. However, in contrast to the folks, I can see the look on your face. He was a neoliberal. He was a champion of neoliberalism. He brought Volcker in to head the Federal Reserve. Volcker, you know, basically set out to weaken the power of labor and really afford capital a greater economic control in America. That said, when Carter ran for re-election in 1980, and he had to confront first the opposition and the competition from Teddy Kennedy, he lost that year in good part because most Americans were fed up with him. And the sort of cherry on top, although well, cherry's a pretty good thing, is the final straw was when he sent a host of helicopters into Iran to try to free the hostages. I mean, Iran's a huge country, and he was sending this, this cohort of helicopters. It was a wild-eyed mission, I think, and they bogged down in the desert sands, as I recall. So if you think about it in those terms, that's not a record of a good and successful president at all. In fact, it was one who I actually think was one of our less desirable presidents. However, now this is the good thing. When he left office, and this is important, most presidents, when they leave office of late, you'll notice, you know, the likes of Obama and Clinton and Bush and others, they set out to enhance their bank accounts by charging people vast sums of money to give speeches at banquets and on other occasions. Carter set out to make a difference with his life who knew the decades would be as many as they were, but he committed himself to Habitat for Humanity. And my wife was reading me something today. I think he had a hand basically in providing 14,000 homes. And I mean, wow. A real hand, you know,
a direct hand building. Yeah.
Like literally holding a hammer and doing the work.
Right. And seriously speaking, I mean, he passed up, a hell of a lot of money to make a humanitarian difference in the world. And for that reason, yes, definitely a good man, even if a not so good president.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I certainly appreciate your perspective. And I know I do the old jokes occasionally, but I mean, were you a voting age back then? And what was your thought at the time? I know where you're at now. Like, where were you? What was going through your head in 76 and 80?
Okay, well, so I'm now going to make a public confession. Okay.
Okay, man.
I did not vote Republican.
You did not vote Republican. Okay.
But I was living in Louisiana, finishing my PhD at Louisiana State University in 1976. And in many ways, my vote, it seemed, would not really matter. It wouldn't count.
Right.
Because the state, it was a one-party state in many ways. But the other thing was, I did not think Jimmy Carter deserved my vote. I didn't have the trust and confidence in him that many other Democrats had in 76. But sure as hell, I wasn't going to vote for Republican. Then in 1980, having proven my fears correct, I decided, and I've never done it since, to vote third party. I voted for Barry Commoner, who was the candidate of the Citizens Party, as I recall. And Barry Commoner was a World War II veteran who then was a leading campaigner for nuclear disarmament in the 1960s. I believe he had a PhD. He was a doc, in some kind of engineering or sciences. So I felt good about the vote at the time, but it basically threw away my vote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I threw away my vote and decided I would never throw it away again. Better to hold my nose and vote for the least evil of the candidates than do that kind of thing. So, and I have no regrets necessarily, but
what about, let me ask you this, Harvey, in doing some of the reading, after Carter's passing here, and being a kid, born in 71. So I very distinctly remember the end of the 70s and the Iran hostage crisis and were talking about it earlier. I mean, until I found out the truth of the Republicans and efforts to basically kneecap Carter in delaying the return of the Iran hostages, right? That would have given him certainly a bump, and they would have got them home to their families quicker by folks within the orbit of Reagan and the Republican Party. I did not know how much of an impact the relationship his rivalry with Kennedy impacted. What was your take on Kennedy during that race? If Kennedy would have come out on top, would you have perhaps
I definitely would have voted for Kennedy. I mean, whatever my reservations about his, I was in college at the time of the Chappaquiddick affair, and I knew people who knew the young woman who died in the car that he was driving that night. But that said, he at least represented, he was rooted, that's a good way of putting it, in that sort of long sort of FDR and the 60s kind of Democratic Party that I at least appreciated. So I would have voted for him. And I was hoping he was going to take out Carter, but you know what I mean, remove Carter from the incumbency. But I obviously can assure you that what happened in 80, this should be noted, is that most Americans this was working people, just stayed home. The turnout for Carter is what cost him. It isn't that everyone turned out to vote for Reagan, however much it might have seemed that way. It was that the turnout for Carter went down dramatically. Mm. I read somewhere in a reliable historical source, it was like 10 million voters just stayed home rather than, because they couldn't bring themselves to vote for Reagan, but they just wouldn't vote for Carter after those several years. I mean, let me remind everyone, the 1970s was a time of serious economic crisis in the United States. It became known as a period of stagflation, in which the economy was stagnant, and yet inflation was running high, and unemployment was also running high. So it was, it was a nightmarish mix.
Yeah.
And he decided, as I said, to take the course of neoliberalism rather than do what would have been Democratic Party leadership efforts in the past, and that is use government to make a difference.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Harvey Kay joining me, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Just 90 seconds left in this segment. Do you think if Kennedy would have come out on top on that primary that he would have been elected? What do you think Kennedy could have beaten Reagan?
He would have run into the question that I asked myself about Kennedy, but I do think he would have. I mean, I really do. Because he would have been seen perhaps as the working man or working person's candidate. This is also interesting. I looked at polling that was done during the late 70s into 1980, and it turns out that it was the generation that had fought World War II, which was, by the way, still very much alive. If you imagine young men in 1945 being 25,
right,
and this is really only, 25 years later? Am I math off? Anyhow. 30 years later, whatever it is. They're middle-aged or entering seniority. They're not that old. Those men and women, they did vote for the Democratic candidate in 1980. It was younger folks, by the way, who turned out for Reagan, which is something to consider, okay?
Kids these days. Harvey Kay, come back with us. He is the Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We're going to shift our conversation into the Civil War at the MAGA, the Republicans. They're eating each other alive.
More from our December 30th talk with Harvey Kay when we come back.
A voice for Madison. Real news and great conversation. 92.7 WMDX.
Burlow Mattress is more than just another mattress store. They're building better sleep for Dane County with handcrafted mattresses made to order right in Madison. And since they live there too, they make every dollar spent matter, actively partnering to benefit the community. You may even see Maddie the mattress mascot bouncing with joy around town. In this new year, get what you deserve. A mattress that supports your dreams. American made, locally crafted. Burlow.
I'm planning our family vacation and need a pet sitter.
We use a house sitter from Hotel K Pet Sitting. You know, freebellyrubs.com.
Free belly rubs?
Yeah, they're local, dependable, and totally spoil our pets. When we get home, our house is just as it was when we left, and our dogs are happy. And the daily messages with pictures really gives us peace of mind while we're away. For house sitting, cat sitting, and dog walks, it's Hotel K Pet Sitting. Reserve now at freebellyrubs.com. freebellyrubs.com.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
Izervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Izervay.
Izervay or Avastin Captid Pagel is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation. 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Show. Today, we're taking a look back at our December 30th talk with Harvey K., our favorite Delano Democrat.
Harvey, before we move on to these other topics, I'll sort of throw this one out there. The Atlantic, of course, everyone's writing up about Jimmy Carter, and I thought this was a nice one. He did a speech on July 15th of 1979, and this is the malaise speech. He kind of, you know, ripped up his original speech and talked about...
Wait,
you know,
79 or 78?
This was 1979.
I thought the speech was in 78. Okay, but go ahead.
Well, it's the Atlantic, man. I'm not going to quote their sources, but that's what they're saying. I thought that the conclusion of this, so this is something that was, you know, from the heart, I think, and that's why apparently, according to the reporting after the speech, he had an 11-point bump on his favorable ratings. But he concluded as such, quote, "In a nation that was proud of hard work, strong families, close-knit communities, and our faith in God, too many of us now tend to worship self-indulgence and consumption. Human identity is no longer defined by what one does, but by what one owns. But we've discovered that owning things and consuming things does not satisfy our longing for meaning. We've learned that piling up material goods cannot fill the emptiness of lives which have no confidence or purpose." Yeah, wow. And I think that it struck me,
see,
because I'm thinking, like, right now, you look at who's going to be in the White House. Like, that is exactly...
Mr. Consumer.
Right. That's exactly what we're dealing with.
You know what? I'm glad you're moved by that. That's the kind of rhetoric of Jimmy Carter that makes me angry. Makes me angry. Because,
why is that?
Because that was the speech in... That's one of the speeches in which he's basically telling Americans, it's all... your fault. When people are going through economic difficulties, you don't tell them it's their fault. By the way, that sounded reminiscent of more recent events. You know, you can't. Okay. And no, I'm quite serious. That malaise speech, by the way, he never used the word malaise in the speech.
He never did. That's correct. Yep.
But that was one of the speeches that really, really drove me to want somebody to run against him in the primary, because what we needed was leadership. And he actually said when he was running for office, I think might have been even his inaugural, I can't remember where, back in 77, he spoke of FDR and LBJ and that, you know, the challenges and leadership and all of that. And what he did in that speech and others is he basically told Americans they should be wary of their neighbors. They can't trust each other. By the way, Dom, if you have a copy of my book, The Fight for the Four Freedoms, it's all in my, I lay all of this out in my book, the disappointment that so many people felt when they, on reflection, for that kind of rhetoric. He basically called on Americans to liberate businesses and that they should, you know, basically accept the status quo and talk nicely about America. It was that kind of stuff. It's just awful.
Well, and maybe, that's a great point, Harvey. And, you know, when we talk about these quotes and it's hard to be in the moment, you know, to put it in perspective and put it in the context of which it was said. I totally get that. You know, when things are south and you're telling the American people, hey, it's your fault, do better, that's not going to resonate very well. But I don't know that the message, although maybe untimely, is inaccurate. You know what I'm saying? Especially given what we see going on right now.
He was a committed Baptist. Maybe he should have spoken every Sunday in this church and not preach to the American people about things that might well be beyond their control.
Yeah, yeah. Good point. Harvey K., let's move along to some of the other issues, Harvey. H-1B visas, Elon Musk, Laura Loomer. I mean, I've heard more about that from these folks in the last week than I've ever wanted to for my entire life. From 30,000 feet, Harvey, how do you think the Chaos Caucus is handling their victory so far?
Okay. Well, first of all, when I hear H1, what is it?
H1B?
It makes me think that that's the next pandemic, yeah. By the way.
Me too.
I know.
Jess and I, we think alike, Jess. It just drove.
My brain just goes to, oh God, what strain of that? Right. Oh no.
H1B 2024.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. And given the new administration, they're not going to even provide us with a vaccine to head off this H1B1 virus. That's important to consider.
Shelves are empty, Harvey. The shelves are empty.
But don't worry, we'll still send things to Russia.
You're right.
Or China. By the way, just as a sidebar, I was said to Jess in the break, you did hear the news about China and how they hacked into the Treasury Department?
Yes, U.S. Treasury says its computers were hacked by a Chinese threat actor in a, quote, major incident. Ooh, a major incident.
Ooh,
that can't be great.
Tomorrow we will discover that all this talk of a deficit is nothing compared to the fact they've wiped out the Treasury altogether.
You're right. Well, they own a bunch of that debt, so they wipe out their own debt that they're bonds that they have purchased.
I guess in that sense we're safe. You're right.
You're right. So we got 2 minutes left in the segment, and we'll get some callers as well. 855-75-CIVIC. Harvey, what's your impression been these last few days?
Well, actually, my head has been spinning over this stuff because, look, under no circumstances do I ever want to be said to have said something nice about Laura Loomer. Let me start with that.
Fair enough.
But one thing that's come out in all this, and I are people not paying attention, is that the Trump-Musk duet is a duet which is anti-American. Okay? What are they doing? They want to. They have little trust. By the way, another case: little trust in their fellow citizens. They haven't talked about providing the kinds of educational resources that would enable Americans to fulfill these jobs. Not to mention, Trump has always filled jobs with people who he's brought in. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. But this whole thing is outrageous, utterly outrageous. And to think that Laura Loomer is speaking a perverse form of the truth is really, I mean, it's really something.
If Laura Loomer and Steve Bannon are the voice of reason in the MAGA party,
we're all screwed.
We really need self-evaluation.
Yes, we are already screwed. It's just a matter of whether we can get off the ground.
So whether or not we get kissed first. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin at Green Bay.
More from our December 30th talk with Harvey when we get back.
Welcome to Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For 92.7 WMDX News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. A Wisconsin child has died from the flu. Health officials say they live in the northern part of the state. Officials from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services say the flu has been deadly here every year over the last two decades. Respiratory disease epidemiologist Tom Haupt.
Children under five are at higher risk for complications from influenza and RSV, for that matter, and COVID, just because of their age. But also pediatric hospitalizations, if they have any kind of underlying illnesses, whether it's diabetes, asthma, anything that would lower their immune system does increase their possibility of having complications from these particular viruses.
On average, 1 to 6 Wisconsin kids succumb to the illness each year. Depending on the strain, 5 to 20% of people can get the flu each year, according to the American Lung Association. And now there's another complication, one that has grown since the start of the pandemic, vaccine hesitancy. Fewer and fewer people are getting their flu shot each year.
We're running at 31% statewide right now, which is disappointing. It's a little bit lower than last year, but it continues that decline. It's frustrating because we want to get this message out to people as to the complications and what can happen if the person who is at high risk does come down with complications. Unfortunately, we have this pediatric death.
Haupt says we're approaching the peak of illness season between flu, COVID-19, and respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. When it comes to the COVID-19 vaccine, only 16% of eligible Wisconsinites have an updated shot. Meanwhile, 22% of people above 60 have their RSV vaccine. To find a vaccine near you, you can call your doctor's office, your local pharmacy, or your local health department. For more news, you can head to our website, WMDXradio.com. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. This is 92.7 WMDX News.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Stand-up comic Bill Burr shared opinions on the catastrophic LA fires during an appearance on Jimmy Kimmel Live, like only Bill Burr can. After saying he was tired of people on the internet sitting at home in their underwear suddenly becoming fire experts, Burr attacked insurance companies, saying they will keep the people's premiums and give themselves bonuses, insinuating that they are the actual looters. John Cena's likability is off the charts with John Cena fans. The sometime actor, sometime wrestler will host a new talk series. Variety reports that Cena will host a 4-episode talker called What Drives You and will interview guests like Logan Paul, Jelly Roll, and Travis Barker in their favorite cars. This is a really original idea that was even more original when Jerry Seinfeld came up with it. What Drives You will air January 21st on the Roku channel. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a few flurries, a low in the low teens, windy with wind chills below zero. Partly sunny for tomorrow, high upper teens, wind chills near 5 below. Partly cloudy Sunday, high near zero, wind chill to 20 below. Right now it's 48.
The John and Gordy Show.
Good morning, Pam.
She's reporting on The Green and Gold, a new film that's out there. You were at the premiere.
Yeah, they had the Green and Gold movie, which is a story about a dairy farmer bets on the Packers to win the Super Bowl. I'll be honest with you. Last time that I went to a red carpet event, it was when a company revealed a new herbicide.
Weekday mornings, 6 till 8 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
Steven Aronson from Wisconsin Knitwear, based in Milwaukee, knithats.com. Our own Beyond the Cheese.
Yeah,
hats.
There you go. That in the green and gold.
Yeah. That is so awesome.
Very, very kind of you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. I was so excited you called. And
you are so
within the day.
We will be giving some of these away.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the next couple of weeks.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays at 11 on 92.7 WMDX and the Civic Media app.
Hey folks, Jimmy K here from Max Inc. Radio. Join me this weekend as I welcome Isaiah and the New People. Plus, Terry chats with jazz musician Janet Plant. It's Max Inc. Saturday and Sunday, 6 to midnight across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
the Dom Salvia Show, where we are today still revisiting our December 30th talk with Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay.
Our favorite Delano Democrat, I'm going to keep on saying it, Harvey, until someone makes a website.
Before we get going, I just want to give a shout out to someone, a listener of your show, who's in West Virginian. Okay, his name is Troy Miller. He's a leading Democrat in the state of West Virginia, one of the progressives. He's actually led the charge in many ways to transform the West Virginia Democratic Party into a truly post-Manchin Democratic Party. Also, he is leading the charge in that state that party should pursue the creation of an economic bill of rights.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yes. So a shout out to Troy Miller, great West Virginian.
All right, Troy Miller getting the love. We're going to talk about this Musk-Loomer situation and this H-1B and visas and so forth. Now, Harvey, apparently they do like 65,000 of these a year. There's another maybe 20,000 or so for folks that are graduating from universities here in the states that they can stay. I mean, I don't think that we're talking about real big numbers, but my takeaway on this was we have a situation where we have migrant workers who are getting paid less than American workers, to the benefit and the bottom line, the profit of these big corporations and billionaires. Now, if I look at like what's going on here in the state of Wisconsin and the dairy industry and agriculture, talk about, you know, these 11 million or 20 million people, whatever your number is, that they're going to, you know, set up camps, the megas are going to start deporting. Well, what's the situation there? Now, perhaps they're using, inaccurate, fraudulent I-9 forms. So they're getting taxes taken out. You know, they're legal, quote unquote, because, you know, the farm owners aren't going to go dig deep unless they've done their part. That's all they need to do. They've done their due diligence by getting assigned I-9, right? And a valid, quote unquote, social number. And that's the end of their due diligence. But at the end of the day, it seems very similar to me. You got folks that are working here under, you know, oppressing circumstances. I mean, the H-1B visas, you know, Musk or Tesla or SpaceX, they hold that over your head, right? And if you work for them, indentured servitude is, I think, what Steve Bannon in some of these articles are referring to. Well, in a very similar situation, I think, on a different scale, the migrant farm workers and the agriculture workers and the slaughterhouse workers, same kind of situation. If anything goes south down there, the employers, presumably knowing that these folks probably aren't, you know, quote unquote legal or have legal, you know, immigration status, can hold things over their workers' heads. So while we're at different pay scales, you know, a high tech worker coming in from India working for Musk at a reduced rate, or, you know, a laborer farmhand coming and working for, you know, the farm up the street, same situation still applies though, Harvey.
Well, you know, what you've said reminds me of a conversation I had with a number of people recently, and that is that the South Asian, the Indian South Asians who are working in Silicon Valley, when I say Silicon Valley, I assume everyone knows what I'm referring to.
Right.
There's a real problem, apparently, that does affect their lives as well, and that is the caste system has found its way into Silicon Valley, so that, and by the way, Newsom, governor of California, vetoed the bill that would have made the presence of that caste system outlawed it. So there's a lot of corruption in all of this, might say, as this unfolds. To me, the problem is that you've got this, well, not problem. First of all, it's wonderful that the MAGA, what they call the billionaires and the right-wing billionaires and the MAGA folks are loggerheads. I hope this isn't just a show. You know, right. I worry about, we're talking about a politics today, which is all show, and Laura Loomer's part of that show. But it would be wonderful to think that this is the first of many battles to take place among who knows how many competing interests there are in that coalition, right?
Yeah.
But I understand what you're saying. Another difference, however, is this: the farm workers you're talking about, they're quite often going to be from Central America and Mexico, okay. Whereas the high tech workers that these guys are looking to import on the H1B1 virus. Sorry.
Visa, yeah.
Those are from East and South Asia. It really is a different kind of thing in the fact that as to how those folks will be treated on a daily basis and whether or not you would actually find them being rounded up and deported. Okay. I mean, it's that different. So I hadn't really thought about it in the terms you mentioned. I will think about it in the future, but it does strike me that we are talking about two different, in quotes, classes and ethnicities of people.
Well, and absolutely right. You know, anyone coming over on H-1B, there's quote unquote legal and informed immigration status. No question about it. I think the overriding issue, it remains the same, the suppression of American wages by the use of these foreign workers. At the end of the day, similar strain between these two different groups and situations.
The longstanding argument on that is that, well, quite often these low-wage jobs Americans wouldn't fill. But the thing is, if they didn't have access to cheap labor, these corporations, they would be compelled in many, many, many cases to raise the wages, which might make them more appealing. Okay, so
and the same thing again with the H-1B, right? If you're bringing these folks in, you're paying them less than you were American workers, because as mentioned in one of the articles I read before you came on, Harvey, apparently Tesla laid off a bunch of American workers and backfilled some of those workers with H-1B visa applicants. You know, that's how they roll.
Right. I mean, look. I mean, it's worth noting that there was some discussion as to whether or not Musk was actually in this country. Legally
himself,
not.
Okay.
Okay. And then, of course, the way in which our once again first lady to be found her way into this country.
Oh,
and
the Einstein visa. Come on, man. I mean, those are even more rare than the H-1B visas. I'm not sure what her Einstein capabilities were, but she got apparently some letters of recommendation that were very persuasive. It's amazing how the rich guy's girlfriends, you know, get the visas.
Yeah, it is. One thing that constantly occurs to me with all of this is you talked a while ago, you brought up the speech Jimmy Carter gave the fact is that again, you referred to the state of America today. Well, our elites, political and economic elites, and their pursuit of their own benefits, we all know what's going on. And as a consequence, it inevitably leads people to some kind of sense that, well, I guess corruption's okay, I guess cheating's okay, I guess if I put my own interests first, it's okay. I mean, once upon a time, for whether they were phonies about it or not, elites had a responsibility to, in quotes, set examples. I'm not defending elites, okay?
Right.
But the understanding of the media was you didn't expose all the corruption, or if you did, you made sure to push people out, not necessarily to leave them in place. So
I don't know, man. I think it's always been there. It's always going to be there.
Yeah,
shining the light on it and having the different, it's a different world, a different media world now. No, I hear what you're saying.
You have a man who's just been reelected president who has dozens of felony convictions, right? I mean, who lies repeatedly. I mean, his whole career has been a mess of lies and dealings that... And now he's rewarded with the presidency of the United States?
Yeah.
Come on.
Because that's our kind of guy. Don't forget the insurrection. 855-752-4842.
Wait a minute. You... I didn't even mention the insurrection.
Yeah, I know, man. You know, that little thing, trying
so
to
easy to forget.
Deny my
everything.
Vote. And that's the one I remember the most because that's my vote he's taken away.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, and by the way, we will be together on January 6th this year, you and I.
Oh, most excellent. Look forward to it. Let's get some callers in. Cam from Appleton, one of my old stomping grounds. Hey, Cam, welcome back. What do you got for us?
You've made that an inside joke between my partner and I. We go, "Where's that place?" And we just say our old stomping grounds. And she just rolls her eyes or I roll mine. But I wanted to bring up, I brought it up when Earl was subbing for Maggie today, and I think it was lost in translation there with him.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that it comes across a little bit better with you guys. But Carter said in 2019 during a retreat in Virginia that he believed that Trump cheated and that the Russians aided him in getting the election for 2016. And that's the only reason why he was the president. And in 2020, the House election security report released. And even though it's redacted, it essentially says that it was cheated again. But this the Russian plan was that if he didn't win, that they would try to instill doubt in the election system. I'm urging you guys again to go, like everyone that's listening, to go look at counties like Maricopa County and Arizona and review this stuff. Jimmy Carter is, he had a lot of smart things about him. I agree with your guess that there were some things that weren't too great, but he knew that Trump cheated. We can't keep pretending like it's not a thing. We can't. We have actual evidence now. We need to.
When you say, but hang on, Cam. When you say we have the evidence, what evidence? What can you articulate? What the evidence is in Maricopa County, for example?
Sure. So there's this thing called drop-off votes. So if you go and look at the actual voting data, which is available almost everywhere for each county and each state at this point, because that took a little while to get, right? If you look at it, it shows statistical impossibilities. Like I'm talking one in quadrillion, like 14 quadrillion chances of it working out the way that it did in just one place, where it's happened in every place for swing states. And in the drop-off votes, you look at them and you see that Trump did statistically way higher or way better than he would get more votes than the governor or Senate person that was on the ballot.
Sure.
And Kamala got far less than the governor or Senate on the ballot for the left. And that only happened in the swing states. It didn't happen in any of the neighboring states. It's never happened in the history of our country, period, not even when Reagan won 49 of the 50 states. It's never happened to this level. There, it's not even like a curve, a cubic curve or anything like that. It's not possible.
So if that's the case, then, Cam, and we've got a couple of minutes, and we'll let Harvey perhaps jump on this on the other side, then who would have standing to bring lawsuits or investigations? I mean, certainly the Democrats in those areas, in Maricopa County and other areas, I mean, if this is well-known knowledge, then where are the lawsuits?
Yep, that's a good question, too. So right now, what's being attempted to be done by smartelections.us is a good resource for this. Smartelections.us is trying to get the hand recounts done. And the problem is that states will come back and say that we already performed our audit. We don't need to. But the audits are, they vary per state. Some of the state's audits only count up to 200 votes out of the entire state.
Right, they do a sampling. They may use the same machines or different machines. Thanks for the call, Cam. Harvey, we got like about a minute left in the segment. What are your thoughts on those statistical anomalies that folks like Cam are bringing?
Well, I can't speak to statistical anomalies that I don't have in front of me.
Access to, sure.
Stuff.
Yeah.
But I do want to say that one thing to keep in mind is that it's not that unusual for the presidential candidate to not get the kinds of votes one might expect, given that others further down the ballot have gotten higher. In other words, you can get Democrats elected down ballot and people just not voting, you know, at the presidential level for them. And I think this time around, it's all the more likely to have to be the case. And I don't know if that's what he's referring to. I mean, there were quite a few people in various parts of.
Come back with us one more segment, revisiting that December 30th talk with Harvey Kaye, our favorite Delano Democrat.
This is Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
Are you looking to kick up your nighttime entertainment? Good times await you at the Lazy Wolf Lounge, Madison's East Side place for friends and family to meet for fun and food. Test your knowledge with Monday trivia. Let your inner rock star out with Thursday karaoke, plus live music, and meet all your friends at the Lazy Wolf for the big game. The Lazy Wolf Lounge, 1617 North Stoughton Road in Madison. Follow them on Facebook or at LazyWolfLounge.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Native American voters prevailed in federal court against the state of North Dakota, protecting the ability to elect the candidate of their choice. January 13th, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear a redistricting case we covered back in May 2024, affirming a North Dakota Federal Appeals Court decision. The appeals court had dismissed a state house district challenge by two non-native residents who claimed their rights were infringed. The case dates back to 2021 when the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara nations, also known as the MHA nation, negotiated with the state to protect native voting power under the 1965 Voting Rights Act, Section 2. After an agreement, state GOP officials later shamefully reversed positions in 2022, embracing a new GOP tactic which argues such majority-minority districts are a violation of the Equal Protection Clause under the U.S. Constitution. The same argument has been made in Robinson v. Calais over Louisiana's now two majority-minority districts. The MHA Nation decision protects North Dakota State House District 4A and three other districts. Great news for Native voters. But the Louisiana case is expected to be heard in the High Court in early 2025, and the conservative justices seem to have made it their mission to dismantle the VRA. We have links to the history of the case at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
A voice for Madison, real news and great conversation, 92.7 WMDX.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hello tomorrow, and goodbye.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. I'm Jess P.S. We are revisiting our conversation with Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay from December 30th.
You know what? I want to give a shout out to your producer, Jess. Okay. And the shout out is, well, question first, who's choosing your intro and outro music? Because if it's you,
it's a
Jess,
team effort. I'm giving you both a shout out.
I love your music.
Thanks, Harvey. Appreciate that. Yeah, we love the music too. We do actually put more effort in here, as much effort into the music as we do the show. Oh man, we got Harvey. We got a few callers on hold, so let's get to them. I saw Bruce on the YouTube. Go Lions! Yeah, go Lions today. I can't believe Minnesota yesterday. Anyway, Tom from Madtown, you are up. Welcome, sir. What do you got for us?
Hey, guys. Soon to be Happy New Year.
Yeah, to you as well.
I have to say the death of Jimmy Carter, and I know his presidency was nowhere near perfect. I understand all that stuff, but, you know, I'm as the resident romantic poet of of this station, I would like to say I just want at least the appearance of Jimmy Stewart in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Or the fact that, you know, JFK, I remember, you know, those people. And Americans who aren't old enough to remember Jimmy Carter or JFK or any of those things, people that were born, let's say, in the last 20 years, don't have the same kind of folklore that we grew up with. And I think it's one of the things we've really lost. You know, you've got a professor emeritus of democracy there, and maybe someday we'll have to give classes in what democracy used to be. So I would love to see, you know, a return to some kind of character. And Jimmy Carter, death of Jimmy Carter really hit me today, especially on, you know, on the different shows today, because I hope it's something we haven't lost.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it. Happy New Year to you as well. He makes a good point, Harvey. But I look at this as, is this something new and lost, or was it never really there? You know, because it's hard, you know, in the course of human history, it's hard to think like, oh, like, this hasn't been done already. And I think this is, it's to me, it's always there. It's always a challenge to find, quote unquote, folks of good character to, you know, go for these jobs. I mean, who wants the crappy job? Look what happens if you go and run for office, man, right? You get a microscope, you know, up your ass, and everyone's talking trash, you know, and you're probably not going to win because most people don't win, especially on their first run. You got to give up whatever you're doing. I mean, and then once you get in, you got to deal with all the actual governance, let alone constituent services and so on and so forth. And Harvey seems like a lot of folks just rather, you know, I'm gonna go work. I'll donate to a candidate, but I'm gonna do my thing and not get involved.
You know, I think of myself as I have a very romantic notion of politics and history, not naive, however.
Yeah.
And let me just say that because I'm a historian and I've spent all these years looking closely at these characters,
right.
Okay? You don't get me started about John Kennedy either, okay?
Yeah, just right.
Don't get me started. You know, one way of putting it is, yeah, Bill Clinton wanted to be John Kennedy. The difference is he got caught.
Yeah. and now no one gives a damn. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
well,
at least, and maybe they will again, but you cannot tell me that the MAGAs give one damn iota about what Donald Trump does.
Right. Well, one thing people should appreciate is apparently the highest divorce rate by religious faith in this country was like Christian evangelicals in the South, something like that.
Right. And highest pregnancy rates and all sorts of different and terrible education outcomes, uh-huh, and so on and so forth. L.A. Tom, you are up. We're on with Harvey. Welcome, Tom. Happy New Year. What do you got?
Hey, Happy New Year, guys. Harvey, first, I should know I am a proud Franklin Delano Roosevelt Democrat. And what I'm trying to figure out is this. Jimmy Carter was not in it for, let's say, the money or the wealth. And at that point, we didn't have Buckley versus Vallejo, Citizens United, First National Bank versus Blatty to put the money into politics the way we did. Why do you think it is that he wasn't as bold as an FDR? And why wasn't it that after FDR left, the Democrats did not continue to be standing on those bold shoulders? If there really was no, I don't know if there's a kickback or what, but where there really wasn't the kickback like there is today.
Oh, well, let me make something clear. My reading has shown me that the Carter family, that is his parents, the family that into which he grew up, were not pro-FDR Democrats, first of all. So that's first. Secondly, the FDR, the decision on the FDR monument, as I recall, may well have been taken during the Carter administration, but Carter was insistent that no public dollars be used to make it happen, unless I've got my monuments mixed up, okay? No, Carter had no real affection and no upbringing that would have had much affection for FDR. He, you know, so in the speech, yeah, he was capable of talking about FDR and LBJ and their leadership regarding especially domestic affairs in the case of Johnson, and especially, well, in both foreign and domestic for FDR. But he just didn't have it in him. He didn't have it in him to be that kind of leader. In some ways, there's a word, you know, he fired his own cabinet. I mean, don't forget, he fired his own cabinet. I mean, what? That's not leadership. That's like a kid who says, "You can't play with my toys" or something.
Thank you to Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. We'll be back in the next hour revisiting our talk with Harvey from January 6th. It was two very different anniversaries. Join us.
A new choice. Madison's Real News and Great Conversation, 92.7 WMDX. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, should you keep a non-traditional pet? Pluses and negatives. We'll talk about it with David Drake. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air. Weekday mornings at 11.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when.
don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. TikTok attorneys say the app in the U.S. will go dark Sunday after the Supreme Court upheld the ban unless the China-based company sells the app due to national security concerns. GOP Senator Josh Hawley reacting on what possible action President-elect Trump could explore.
President Trump, under the law, can delay any implementation for 90 days with the stroke of a pen. The law permits that. I would expect he'd probably do that in order to facilitate further discussions about a sale.
Inauguration day Monday, moving indoors due to the dangerous cold expected in Washington, D.C. At the Justice Department today, staffers lined up to bid farewell to Attorney General Merrick Garland as he left the building. He served in the role for the entire Biden administration. Walgreens has agreed to pay nearly $107 million to settle a suit that alleged violations of the False Claims Act. The Justice Department says the large pharmacy chain resold prescriptions that were filled but never dispensed. This is ABC News.
You can always